after our holiday break,
it is now time to turn our attention back to the book of Acts, almost at the very end of the book of Acts. And we see there the conclusion, whatever, the end point of Paul's journey, at least to the point where he was back on solid ground and back safe. Up to this point, he had been arrested unjustly in Jerusalem because he had appeared in the temple and been accused of something that he very definitely did not do. And then he was taken into custody by the Roman authorities, who found themselves in a dilemma. They couldn't punish Paul because he had not violated any Roman law, but yet they could not, or they would not, release him because that would have caused great anger among the Jewish authorities. So Paul was in a state of limbo until he took advantage of the right of every Roman citizen to appeal to Caesar directly. Well, that raised a little bit of a problem, because here he was in Judea and Caesar was in Rome. So you had to take the prisoner, namely Paul, and get him to Rome, which in those days was not as simple as putting someone on a plane, especially that time of year. They had to make their way from port to port. Their ships were not durable enough, were not engineered well enough to make the entire journey from Israel to Rome in one stop. They had to really hug the coast and then put into port in various places. And since it was getting late in the year, it was probably around this time of year, or even a couple of weeks later, that he's trying to make this trip. And in the Mediterranean, things are very treacherous. And sure enough, the crew decided to make for a better port than the port they were in, and it did not go well. They wound up being blown off course. They wound up in the clutches of a terrible storm, and a terrifying storm, in which the ship was destroyed. It went aground, was beached, really, not really breached, but came to rest on a sandbar away from shore, so that the crew had to swim for their lives, or the passengers on the ship had to swim for their lives. And then we get to Acts chapter 28, starting in verse 1. When they had been brought safely through, then we found out that the island was called Malta. So they were way off course. Way, way off of course. They were all the way over here on Crete, I believe, where they were trying to get from one end of the island to the other to get to safe harbor. And instead they were blown out into the Mediterranean, and just by God's grace, we're able to find Malta, which is just beneath the much bigger island of Sicily, and Italy being over here. So they were able to find their way to Malta. And I was reading about the details. There's someone, I don't remember who it was, I didn't print it out or record it. It's printing out in our house right now is a difficult process. A long story there. But he looked at it from a sailor's viewpoint, and it was by God's grace that they even washed up on the island, because at the time that they ran aground on that sandbar, they were most likely not running towards the island, in which case they would have been able to beach the ship, but they were being driven parallel to the island. So had the ship not run aground, they would have passed by the island and been back out in the open Mediterranean. where they would surely have perished since they had no provisions at that point. They had thrown all their provisions overboard. Verse 2. The natives showed us extraordinary kindness, for because of the rain that had set in and because of the cold, they kindled a fire and received us all. They didn't know who these people were. There were over 200 of them, 274 people, waterlogged, straggling in off the ocean, floating in on bits of debris, a pretty sorry lot of people. And water streaming down across their faces, hair plastered down on their foreheads, clothing soaked. And remember, it was this time of year, and even in the Mediterranean at this time of year, it was starting to get cold. So they kindled a fire. And you would think that all the castaways would have been laying on their backs, groaning. But not Paul. Verse 3, but when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks, so he was off working. He was still pumping. He was still helping. Bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire. A viper came out because of the heat and fastened itself on his hand. Vipers are poisonous. It was a poisonous snake. When the natives saw the creature hanging from his hand, they began saying to one another, undoubtedly this man is a murderer. And though he's been saved from the sea, justice has not allowed him to live. You know, the Jonah effect. Like in the book of Jonah, when the storm blew up and they cast lots to find out who it was. Well, here the islanders are looking and saying, oh, that must be the reason. That must be the guy. However, verse 5, he shook the creature off into the fire and suffered no harm. It's like, laugh, into the fire. End of the story. Verse 6, but they were expecting that he was about to swell up or suddenly fall dead. But after they had waited a long time and had seen nothing unusual happen to him, they changed their minds and began to say that he was a god. So, fickle crowds from murderer to God. I could just picture them all kind of sitting around watching to see what was going to happen. They were looking down on his hand, you know, trying not to look like they were looking down on his hand, but looking down on his hand, waiting to see when it was going to swell up and when he was just going to grasp his throat like something out of the movies, go, and fall over dead. But nothing happened. They finally decided, well, this guy must be a god, because poisonous snake, hand, we know what happens. Didn't happen. All right. Verse 7, now in the neighborhood of that place were lands belonging to the leading man of the island named Publius, who welcomed us and entertained us courteously 3 days. By the way, this was a title, the leading man of the island, first man of the island. Archaeologists have found that that's what the leader of the island was named, was called. And that was the title, like we call somebody mayor or we call somebody, you know, president of the town council. Their leader was called the first man of the island. The man was named Publius. Welcomed us and entertained us courteously 3 days. Verse 8, and it happened that the father of Publius was lying in bed afflicted with recurrent fever and dysentery. Apparently there's some illness on that island or endemic to that island dealing with a bacterial infection of the sheep that gets into people from the sheep's milk, which causes these kinds of symptoms. And Paul went in to see him, and after he had prayed, he laid his hands on him and healed him. After this had happened, the rest of the people on the island who had diseases were coming to him and getting cured. They also honored us with many marks of respect, and when we were setting sail, they supplied us with all we needed. At the end of 3 months, we set sail on an Alexandrian ship which had wintered at the island, which had the twin brothers for its figurehead. So they were on the island for 3 months. By the way, the twin brothers were Castor and Pollux, I believe, which were regarded as kind of the patron demigods of sailors. So it was like, that was not just an idle comment. It's here that the crew, or the centurion, the people left, were taking no chances this time. They were sailing on a ship that had a good omen on it, which was the Castor and Pollux on its figurehead. A couple of things to note about this. First of all, we, as human beings, would consider a shipwreck to be a bad thing, generally. I mean, on our bucket list of things to do before we die, being involved in a shipwreck is usually not on it. Okay? It's not something that people look forward to. It's not something people aspire to. Paul, I'm sure, was wondering, up to this point, what in the world was going on. It seems like things are getting worser and worser for Paul, up until the point they actually stumbled onto this island. Here he was minding his own business in the temple. He gets arrested. He gets sent to Rome. And it isn't enough that he gets sent to Rome, but they have difficulty traveling. And then they wind up shipwrecked on this island. And then, to boot, he gets bitten by a snake. Charming. Just simply charming. Not exactly a good day in our estimation. But yet, look at how God used all this. Even the snake. Even the snake. We have now this entire island that probably would not have been on the A list of evangelism targets. You wouldn't think that people said, oh, okay, our first goal is Malta. You look at a map of the Mediterranean. Sicily is big. Malta's this little speck to the south of Sicily. It isn't something that jumps out at you. So, for some reason, God needed the gospel to be brought to this island. And the people on it were ready. And you can see the character of the people on there. It's like, in one sense, too, here these people were just entertaining strangers. Who knows why? That was just what they did. And as a result, they wound up having their sick healed. They wound up having the gospel brought to them. That was the first point that came to me, is where the book of Hebrews talks about many have entertained angels unaware. It's like here these people showed hospitality to these strangers who were in need. And they wind up getting such a monumental blessing, something beyond anything they could have imagined, that started out with that simple act of showing kindness to these people. Even the snake played a part. Well, a short part. Being a snake, it wasn't a blessing to the snake, certainly, but that's okay. The snake was minding its own business, and then it wound up in the fire, but oh well. The snake played its part in this, because the snake opened up that really opportunity to speak to and minister to the people in that island. Had there been no snake, Paul would have been just another member of this party that was there on the beach with the fire. But instead, Paul was considered in some sense an honored guest. And so he had an opportunity to go speak to Publius, who is the leading guy on the island. Tradition, by the way, says that at that opportunity, the Maltese embraced the gospel, that there were several thriving communities of believers established that lasted for hundreds of years. And tradition is fallible, and who knows, but tradition even said that Publius came to become a believer and was a prominent leader, not only of that community on Malta, but also went to minister in another community, which name escapes me, around the Mediterranean. So if tradition is accurate, and usually tradition is close, if not 100% accurate, then Paul's visit to this island was not fruitless, but it was something that brought great fruit with all the natives. Think also of the soldiers that were assigned to, quote, guard, unquote, Paul, and all the things that they've seen him do. They've seen him pretty much take charge of this ship and get them safely to land. They've seen him get through this snake incident, and now they're seeing him heal these people on the entire island. I would say that would have left quite a mark on these, even these hardened soldiers. And I think it will show up in the next part of the chapter when we get to it. When we see how kindly the soldiers are treating Paul and how much leeway they give him. And I'm not sure, but I imagine they gave some testimony, some pre-testimony of him to the authorities. And tradition, once again, tradition says that Paul was released, eventually released, and was able to minister for several more years before he was finally apprehended and martyred. So it says something to us in that God creates opportunities even out of things that we wouldn't consider to be the happiest moments in our lives. I can remember I've been through some bad things, but those were some, I can't say bad things, because nothing's bad. All things work together to the good. Some challenging things, let's say challenging things in my life that resulted in an opportunity to minister to others around me who had observed those sorts of things going on. And God uses things even when they seem like they are complete catastrophes in order to be a testimony to people around us and even to some extent in our own lives. I don't know what this meant in Paul's character. Must have meant something, because it was also for his good. Also, from the other perspective, from the Maltese perspective, it says that we, when we entertain strangers, we never know what's going to happen to the good. Now, that's not to say that we should be indiscriminate about that. One of the letters of John, I don't remember which one it is, talks about not helping out those who are false teachers. So we have to be discriminate about those strangers that we assist, because some people we're not even supposed to give a greeting to, but we are to be discriminate that some people are not. There we go. It's in 2 John chapter 1. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house and do not give him a greeting. The one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. So that doesn't mean that we should be indiscriminate. That doesn't mean that we should, like, be driving along and see a, you know, someone who's particularly dangerous looking, and decide that God, that we are under obligation to help them. Some people are led by God to help those kinds of people, and all the power to them. And I have sometimes been led by God to stop and help people along the side of the road, or, you know, people asking directions, or even people asking for a handout. But be sensible about it. You know, pray for God's leading. Try to understand who it is that you are helping, and don't put yourself into danger unless God has absolutely spoken to you in a very clear way that He is going to protect you from the danger. But if not, just be careful about assisting those who are strangers. It also means that you give people what they need and not necessarily what they want. Scripture says that if man should not work, neither should he eat. So assisting strangers doesn't mean enabling them to live an irresponsible lifestyle. I'm very cautious about giving money to people who are standing in the median strip with the sign looking a little bedraggled because you don't know anything about them. I also don't typically give money to those who are hoisting buckets with some picture on it of animals or big brown-eyed children, because you don't know anything about them. Anybody can buy a bucket and slap a picture off the internet on it and go stand at an intersection. So use your discretion on that. It's more like people that you know need a helping hand. They need encouragement. They need a little bit of help. They need maybe even just your friendship or words spoken at the right time. Don't hesitate, because you never know what's going to happen. You never know what opportunities that will open up. You never know what direction God's going to take it and use it. And once that opens up, you don't know how God's going to be able to use it for His own glory. In this case, a whole island, really, was reached for the gospel. And it started out, really, by an act of kindness by the people there. Something we need to keep our eyes open. Something that we need to always be in prayer about. Something that we need to be willing to be used by God, no matter what the circumstance. Let's pray. Dearest God and Father, I thank You for the example of Paul. I thank You for the testimony passed down to us. May we be able to have Your discernment and Your understanding in terms of reaching out to the needy, to the strangers, but also that we might have eyes of faith, that we might see that no matter how challenging the circumstances, that You still have everything under control, so that everything is working together for good for those who love God, who love You, who are called according to Your purposes. And may we have Your attitude and Your courage and Your strength in dealing with everyone that comes across our path, not for our own sake, but for Yours and for the glory of our Messiah, Yeshua.